This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
If you don't like snakes, you'd better move to Alaska, Hawaii, or Maine. Otherwise, no matter where you live in the United States, you're sharing geography with at least one of the 20 venomous snakes that call the U.S. home. You and your pet may encounter one when out for a walk or playing in your backyard. They can even slither into your home unnoticed. Imagine the scene. Suddenly your pet is crying in pain or favoring a body part. Is it because of an insect bite, broken limb, or snake bite? What do? Can you just wait and see? Or do you need to see your veterinarian? And how quickly do you need to get there? Your knowledge and the steps you take can make the difference between discomfort and death. My guest is Dr. Carl Jandry. He has seen his share of snake bites as a critical care specialist at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, where he also serves as the Associate Dean for Student Programs. So if I haven't made your skin crawl, hang in there. We'll be right back after this short break.
Molly, here's your dinner. Zeus, that's not your food.
Don't let that happen to your precious cat. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and conveniently located on the cat tree. It's the perfect way to eat. It's a beautiful wrought iron tray that easily attaches to your cat tree and keeps dogs and other critters out of your cat's dish. A must for multi-pet households. There's a 6-inch tray for large bowls and a 4-inch tray for smaller bowls. Purchase your cat tree tray today. Go right now to cattreetray.com. That's cattreetray.com. cattreetray.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Well, I have to admit, as a pre-veterinary student, I had a major aversion to snakes, but I did volunteer work at Lion Country Safari in Southern California, and the resident head veterinarian made sure I had lots of contact time with the snakes that were in residence. That was much to my chagrin. I came to enjoy and really appreciate these serpents, and with time, I even owned a rosy boa named Pablo. Now, there are approximately 3,000 species of snakes in the world, and only 200 are considered venomous or poisonous. In the U.S., the CDC believes that about 7,000 people a year are bitten by venomous snakes, and thankfully, less than a dozen have fatal encounters. Sadly, there are no statistics for pets, but Dr. Jandry, are you seeing a lot of snake bites in California?
Yeah, we see our fair share here in the Davis area. We are a catchment hospital, a tertiary care referral center for people within a 2 to 3 hour drive are our typical clients. So there are animals that are bitten between the coast and Reno, north to Redding and south to Bakersfield. And everyone in our area has a plenty of fair share of snakes that are going to do damage to their pets. They're often treated locally, but sometimes they're referred to us for some special or more difficult cases.
Do you find that the numbers seem to be increasing or decreasing? We won't get into climate change, but do you think the numbers are increasing or decreasing?
You know, this year, we're on track for about a standard year. We, you know, I would say that there's nothing that I've seen has been a pressure that has increased the incidence of our snake bites or the severity, but we're still just seeing about the same we always see.
As I was getting ready for this interview, I was going, okay, how many snakes? I know I've heard of cottonmouths and things like this, but I better figure out, you know, what's out there. Thankfully, in Southern California, we have some rattlesnakes, and I do see my fair share also coming into the practice, but found that there is about 10 really deadly snakes in North America. You're probably familiar with them. So cottonmouths, and those are the ones that just freak me out learning about them. Do you know much about cottonmouths, Dr. Jandry?
No, I actually don't, because, you know, in this area, we don't really have cottonmouths. It's mostly from the southeast, the mid-Atlantic states, if I'm not mistaken.
Those are nasty little creatures. They swim.
Yeah, definitely want to be scared of that. But ours, typically in the northern California, are the northern Pacifics, the western Diamondbacks. As you move south into California, you get to start to see Mojaves. And if you move towards Colorado, they have prairie rattlesnakes. So there's regional differences based on the species that likes to live in that specific area. A lot of them behave similarly, though, although our snakes here in California tend not to swim. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. It's like, I can just imagine it's summertime, you're out for a hike, you see this nice stream, you want to jump in the stream, and here's this cottonmouth that likes to hide in the water. So you're right. So the 10 most deadly snakes in the United States or North America are cottonmouths, timber rattlesnakes, black diamond rattlesnakes, and those are here in the western United States, British Columbia to northern Mexico. Tiger rattlesnakes, I had never heard about them. Copperheads, and I found it interesting. They're saying there's so many more bites from copperheads, not because they're really aggressive, but I guess most snakes, as I've seen too, as you approach them, they go, whoa, never mind, let me get out of here. These guys tend to just freeze where they are. Then you get near them and they go, oh, let me bite you. And they go up in trees. So it's like, thank you. Coral snakes, and that's one. Coral snakes, that one is like, okay, they're red, black, and yellow. It's like, okay, what is the little mnemonic that's out there to remember? Red and yellow, are you dead? No, red and black, is that okay? And if I remember correctly, it's red on black, the bands of the snake, and they're kind of little skinny guys. Okay, Jack. Red on yellow, dead fellow. And they're in the southeast, and supposedly one of these little guys can hold enough venom to kill 5 people. It's like, yes, back away from that snake. I don't care what colors it is, just in case. And then there's the western diamondback you mentioned, eastern diamondback, the prairie rattlesnake that you had also mentioned that's here in our part of the world, and the Mojave. Is like, I don't know if I want to, you know, do any more hiking out there.
It's the thing that we all worry about. Those people who are avid hikers and their dogs who are really acclimatized to hiking through the foothills and the mountains of California, they love it so much that they take on this risk. But also those people who know what they're doing and the dogs who know what they're doing are, you know, they go out and they have their worry, but they don't disrupt their fun. It's just what to do if an emergency does happen is their key to success. We all always try to avoidance, and I think avoiding those environments is ideal. But sometimes you just have to have fun and live your life, right? So yep. Knowing what to do if there does happen to be an emergency is the trick.
Okay, so going for hikes, mentioned that sometimes they'll slither in the house. Where and when do these animals typically get bitten by snakes? Time of year, what are they doing? Is it cats more than dogs, or why do you think one's more than the other?
We know that dogs and cats tend to both get bitten, but of course dogs are probably a little more rich in number of attacks or snake bites a year because they are going to be going more hiking and out and about into those environments where the snakes tend to live. And rattlesnakes really don't want to live in urban areas. They prefer to be in places that are less traveled. They're not very social creatures. They are out doing their thing, but they tend not to be in your downtown areas. The cats, we know, are more resistant to the venom, so if they're bitten with the same amount that a dog gets, their symptoms are less. However, when a cat gets bitten, usually the cats are more inquisitive and they're investigating, and they're not going to back down from a snake as readily as a dog. So the cats are usually looking at it as some sort of interesting thing, and that's where the snake probably is a bit more on the defense at first. But then if the cat's taunting the snake, they're going to switch to an offense. And when their snakes are on an offensive prowl, or they're going to bite someone with an offensive strike, they're going to lash out with as much as they have to make sure that they're going to survive this interaction. So even though cats may be more resistant, they often have much worse bites because they're envenomated with much larger degree of venom, making them more challenging to treat when they get to the veterinary hospital. Luckily, those types are less common than your average dog who's out on a hike or sniffing around the farm, contacts a snake hiding in a wood pile or trying to mind its own business, sunning itself. So we see dogs and cats, both usually starting when the weather breaks and starts getting nice. So around here, usually around the end of March, is when we'll see our first start of the snake bite seasons. They last through the warmer months, and our last one in general arrives end of September, early October. So usually November, December, January, February, we don't see any snake bites at all in our area due to the weather pattern. It's a little cooler, there's a little more rains, and that's really when the snakes take a break and usually do their hibernation for the winter season. But our biggest time for snake bites is definitely April through August.
I can see, yes, those cats just going, ooh, what's that? Let me piss it off. And then, yes, the snake says, okay, I gave you a warning. That's how it goes. I think for people that are listening right now, all right, what's so bad about a snake bite? Or it bites you, and we've heard about venom. So, Dr. Jandry, what is venom? And I know there are various types. If you could explain that.
Venom that comes from the poisonous snakes or poisonous anything, venom is just a collection of enzymes and proteins that are meant to degrade and break down tissue, blood, muscle, skin, and all of the proteins and enzymes in the venom are actually put in place so that the digestion process can actually start to occur in the basic meal that the snake's going to eat. It's a helpful adaptation so that they don't have to do as much chewing and as much digesting once it gets into their system, because that's a little bit more difficult for them.
So it's a tenderizer.
Yes, kind of. It's probably the best tenderizer you can ever get, if you can stomach that. The process happens very, very readily because this venom is protected in the venom glands that usually run through these fangs in the snake. And when the bite occurs, the snake squeezes the gland to inject the venom, and the venom goes right through the tooth into the patient's tissue. And from the presence in the tissue, it just basically starts to degrade all the tissues. The major types of toxins are going to break down tissue and cause bleeding defects. In certain snakes, like the Mojave, there is a more of a neurologic impairment kind of toxin. So instead of causing tissue destruction and bleeding, their venoms most likely can cause paralysis by impairing the nervous function. So that nervous paralysis can lead to disuse of, say, the limb, but it can actually be as profound that it can cause nervous paralysis to prevent motion of your respiratory muscles so you can stop breathing, impairing you and killing you, and then the snake can have his meal. So the toxins are variable by each snake or by each species. They're also variable on the time of the year. They can produce different toxins or different enzymes in their venom that help them to adapt to their climate, to the time of the year, to the type of pressures that are around. Is food less scarce or more scarce? Those toxins can be adapted based on the snake's need. So it's kind of an unknown for us as veterinarians as to what we're dealing with, because every snake is almost like a whole new bite. Every snake bite is never, ever the same as the next snake bite because of the toxicity of the venom, the time of the year, the size of the snake, was it an offensive or a defensive strike? Those are all unknowns, and that leaves us a little bit scratching our head at times to know what is best to do. And it's always also worrisome because it also gives our animal-owning public a little bit of wonder, what do I do if my snake is bitten as well? So the amount of venom that's injected is never known. But to counteract the venom, we would have to give just as much as we would need of the anti-venom to try to counteract the amount that the snake put in. Since there's an unknown of how much goes in, we don't always know the right amount of anti-venom to use when it comes to the treatment. However, more is better than less. So
definitely be on the safe side.
When there's a worry, we do err on the safe side. If the progression of the bite wound, the bleeding, the tissue destruction, the pain, or the nervous impairment, we give more antivenom to counteract those symptoms.
I know that I'd always heard, and you really seem to clarify this, that at least in Southern California, since it's the rattlesnake that we have to be concerned with here, I always heard that it was early in the season and it was a young snake. And sometimes, how do you know if it's a young snake? If it's a young snake and, you know, a dog is nosing around, that the juvenile has less control over those poison glands and will strike out and just release a lot more of it versus that seasoned snake that goes, eh, let me just give you a little warning. I'll give you a bite and just go away. And here, just leave me alone. So it seems to be kind of going along with what you're saying. But the other question is, too, as I said in the introduction, you have a pet that's been outside, is maybe off leash and is sniffing around the bushes and comes back and it's crying and it's holding up a leg. How do you know if it's a snake bite, there was a dog that ran off, maybe bit your dog in the leg, or a cat, and or is a bug bite? How do you know the difference?
Yeah, sometimes that's really a challenge. From the perspective of a snake bite, it would be nice if every snake bite on the dog or on the cat was found, and you found two puncture wounds very close together that would indicate their fangs. Sometimes the coats are so hairy and the animal's so painful from the bite, you can't find those bite wounds. In general, comparing all those types of bites, a dog bite, a cat bite, a snake bite, or a bug bite, oddly enough, because of the toxins that the snake venom has, usually the only thing I would hang my hat on to differentiate is the severity of the pain. There's a lot of pain from the venom just marching its way and digesting all the tissues. We don't often find the bite wound site or the fang marks. It's true, a dog bite or a cat bite can certainly act painful, make the leg or the other body part seem to be sore, dysfunctional, and clearly not right. So in all senses, all of those things to know for sure, go to a seasoned professional who's dealt with this. Go to your local veterinarian, go to an emergency veterinary clinic, and those people have the experience to help differentiate when the clarity is not so clear if this was a bug versus a cat bite versus a snake bite.
I know my own cat, and I have a one-year-old kitten. She was out in my backyard, and I was in the house, and it was a protected area. And she came in and said, well, you either have mumps, you have cancer, or you found a bee and it didn't like the way that you were playing with it, because her little face was all swollen. And I looked and she was breathing okay and she had a puffy little cheek. And it's like, okay, she was thankfully all right. And following day it went down where it was supposed to. But there have been rattlesnakes in my condominium area, so I was a little cautious, but I checked her all over. So right now we're talking to Dr. Carl Jandry, and he has seen snake bites as a critical care specialist at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. We're going to be right back after this short break and talk about what you should do for your pet. So we'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Get the stinky dog away from me.
Bad breath and bad gas.
Petey stopped eating. All his hair fell out.
Itching, licking, missing fur.
At least $5,000 in vet bills.
Creams, antibiotics, sprays.
No results.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite.
DINOVITE.com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite is nutrition.
The shedding has stopped and the itching has stopped.
Her coat is not soft. It's silky.
It's healthy and shiny and glossy.
She's got life. She's got energy.
Tons of energy. No more bad smell.
Dynavite's the bomb.
Dynavite is the best thing that's ever happened to my dogs, you know, besides me, of course.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dynavite for life.
DINOVITE.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Jandry, this is really kind of scary. So you have this pet that got bitten by, you think, a snake, and you're out on a walk with your dog, and you're maybe a mile from your car. Is there something that you can do while you're out there? You know, we've heard of snake bite kits. Are they a good idea for people to carry for themselves and use on their pets?
Actually, they're not very helpful. There's been nothing that we've found that has helped improve the outcome of snake bites other than the treatment with anti-venom. So what we usually recommend if you are out on that hike, you're not so close to your car and you might not be so close to a veterinary care facility, calmly walk back to the car, get in the car, go seek veterinary attention.
Should you let the dog walk or do you have to carry it?
To tell you the truth, some people are hiking with dogs that they can't carry.
True.
So you do what you can. If you prevent more blood flow and you can carry them, that's great. If it's a small dog and it's not going to be a trauma to you, then go ahead and pick it up. But most of the time I just say, walk calmly back. Don't run, because if you run, you're going to bring up blood pressure. You're going to promote blood flow, and then it's going to start spreading the venom more readily. Sometimes they're so painful, it's hard to carry them comfortably too, and they're more comfortable walking on their own than if we're trying to manipulate them. So I guess we're going to have to use our best judgment on that, whether we're going to carry them, walk calmly back with them, or stay put, have someone go get the car and bring it up to you. That's another idea. But seeing the local veterinarian would probably be the most helpful, because snake bite kits, which often had like a suction device to try to suck out the venom, that doesn't really work because that injection into the tissues is so deep and it's so spread already by the time you get to it. There's hardly any way that that's going to be removed through a suction device. Using ice to reduce the blood flow can help temporarily, but if you're out on a hike, who's got ice?
How about a tourniquet or something? Yeah,
yeah,
tourniquet.
Tourniquets are proven to be actually kind of dangerous. They are never proven to be beneficial in our veterinary patients, and there is some controversy for their use in people. A tourniquet that actually works really, really well can cause a lot of local destruction, and that local destruction can cause you to lose toes or fingers or limbs. So that's probably not even recommended anymore, especially by the human physicians. So we're going to probably just recommend to get a good veterinary attention to find out if it needs to be escalated to an anti-venom treatment, or maybe it's just going to be pain control. Some of these animals have what we call dry bites. A dry bite is certainly a small amount of injected venom, just to be sort of like a get away from me, I don't like you near me kind of warning bite, not a lash out with all I have because I'm a fearful for my life kind of bite. And those dry bites are painful, but they usually don't cause the significant progressive tissue destruction. But they probably still require some pain control because these animals are certainly still uncomfortable. And it would be up to the judgment of the veterinarian in care of your animal to decide if antivenom is the best treatment.
And what is antivenin? So people think that this is always going to be the cure, but not always. And I think it depends on the species of snake. Is that correct?
Yeah, so there are a couple different products that veterinarians have in their pharmacy that can be used to treat snake bites. One of them is antivenin, and that's a trade name from one company. There are some other products, and all of them are called antivenoms. It's just to combat the venom toxins, and they're all made in very, very different ways. They can be derived from different animals that are hyperimmunized, so we can have antivenom that comes from a sheep, or it can come from a horse, and those proteins are extracted from a blood donation so that they can help bring some protection against the venom that's injected into the dog or the cat. They're all administered intravenously over time. There's always a risk for a reaction, like an allergic reaction to those proteins. There are protocols to use that are published in our veterinary literature that help us understand the best and safest way to use these products. But all antivenoms in general are just the combative enzymes against the bad enzymes that were placed into the patient by the venomous snake. They have a considerably high cost in general. So one of the problems with treatment of rattlesnake bites is that these antivenoms do cost quite a large sum, sometimes between $200 or $500 per vial. And in a very severely envenomated patient, we might need 2 or 3 vials. So that can escalate the cost of the medications alone quite high, but their effectiveness is actually usually quite good.
So even it being effective by giving this injection of antivenom, I know you can still have tremendous amount of damage that occurs, so much depending on, as you mentioned before, how much venom is placed in the pet, where it occurs, how long it takes to get the pet to the veterinarian, the age of the animal, the overall size of the animal, its health status, all of those things can make a difference. So you as a criticalist having a pet present itself to UC Davis, what would be the scenario, a common scenario of it walks through the door, what do you do?
The most common scenario is that they'll come in the door, they'll triage them, find out that they have a high risk for a snake bite, usually due to the acute onset of something very, very painful, swollen and bruised and rapidly progressive. They'll be triaged to the emergency room where we're going to start treatment very, very quickly. First, we usually put in an IV catheter and give pain control because they are always very, very so painful. It makes even examining that injured area easy for us. They hate us when we touch it because it is that painful. So pain control is usually first. Generalized physical, making sure the rest of their body is not affected. Maybe it's just this one region, perhaps the front leg, which is very, very common to be a front leg or a face, the muzzle. They're often bitten while they're sniffing the animal. So we're examining these body parts with pain control on board. Then we're going to have to screen the whole body to make sure it's not systemic. It's just the local area. Talk to the owner then about what we think's going on, and if we do advance forward with the antivenom treatment, most commonly, to tell you the truth, regardless if it's a small dog or a big dog, one vial of our antivenom is usually most effective. I probably think about 20 to 25% of the time we might have to use two or more vials for a very severely envenomated patient. How do we know if the first vial worked? We re-examine the patient. If it slows the progression or stops the progression of the bruising and the pain, then we're probably right on track. If it still seems to be progressive or still not resolved enough of their symptoms, we might move to that second vial. They usually stay in the hospital for probably 3 to 6 hours as we're monitoring and medicating them. They don't always have to stay for an overnight stay, but it certainly depends on the severity of their discomfort and how many vials of antivenom we need to provide for them. Because usually the infusion takes probably between 2 and 3 hours to treat with the antivenom. We don't use antibiotics because these tend not to have any infection locally or systemically, and then the animal tends to go home just on some pain control for a tapering dose over the next several days.
And I know, I'm sure you've seen the times when the damage to the skin, especially with the hemotoxic type, will result in needing surgery to get rid of some of that dead tissue, and even sometimes the possibility that amputation is necessary.
Yeah, most commonly people will bring their animals to us a little more readily, and we can stop the progression of the very severe symptoms. However, there are occasions where delayed treatment does lead towards more tissue destruction. And luckily, those are a small portion of our population, but we have had to do some extensive surgeries and some a lot of tissue wound management for when the skin could become necrotic and slough off and they're left with a very large open wound on the leg, for instance. So there is a pretty important need for early treatment because we think if that venom marches through the patient and gets way ahead of us before antivenom treatment, they're usually left with much more extensive damage.
So the bottom line is get your pet in sooner than later, definitely.
Always. It's always the bottom line.
Dr. Jandry, there at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, when you see these animals, or even beforehand, people are concerned. They say, okay, I live in an area where there's rattlesnakes. My dog and I, cat goes outside, dog and I hike around a lot. The rattlesnake vaccine, what is the view of UC Davis on the rattlesnake vaccine?
Yeah, there's a rattlesnake vaccine that's available that has been USDA approved for safety, but the trials for efficacy to reduce symptoms for a patient who's been bitten by a snake or to reduce the need of antivenom has actually not been proven. So we have seen many animals who have had the rattlesnake vaccine who still need to have the same kind of treatment as any other snake-bitten animal. So our current status and our recommendation on the rattlesnake vaccine is to not use it because it does not give improvement to the patient's injury and doesn't prevent the necessity for seeking veterinary attention.
So it gives you somewhat a false sense of security. And I know it's a hard one. We carry it at my practice. And, you know, it's not going to save your pet. May just buy you some time. But I love your input. Thank you very much. And speaking of input, when a dog gets bitten, I've seen some where it's like, okay, you were bitten last year and you're back again. And people are going, what a stupid dog. You know, this dog got bitten last year and it got bitten again. It's like, well, maybe it's not the dog. Maybe it's the human that needs to adjust what they're doing with their pet outside. So do you see dogs that will get bitten multiple times, and do the reactions get worse after multiple bites?
We actually do see animals sometimes on a yearly basis. We do have one Dalmatian from the next town over who seems to come in every year, and owners keep asking that exact same question. And of course, he's a Dalmatian, so you can't teach them much, but he's a lovely dog, and every year his reactions are different because, you know, like I said before, the snake venom on a pressure that's due to the weather, availability of food in their environment, and their mixed venom of different proteins and enzymes, each bite, each time is different. And for some dogs who do get bitten on multiple occasions, it's almost like a whole new day. It's not going to be a worse reaction second time because the enzymes and the poisons in that venom are different. And we have seen some that have had antivenom treatment the second time but don't need it on the third time because maybe the third time it's a less severe bite. So I think about snake bites as being unique each time, and we don't have any proof that dogs do, or cats, both of them don't get worse as the bite continues.
And they don't build up a sensitivity to the antivenom?
As far as we know, no. But because it is a foreign protein, we do know that they mount an immune response to foreign protein. So one thing that I think veterinarians do worry about more than the re-envenomation of the pet, we worry about more the re-administration of the antivenom. Because if you set up a immune reaction because of using a foreign protein-based antivenom a year or two prior, when you reintroduce that protein a year or two later, there's a chance that the animal's immune system will recognize that as foreign and mount an inflammatory or an allergic reaction much more readily. We know that as veterinarians, and we have to take that into consideration if the patient is a repeat offender.
So with these repeat offenders, or if you never want your pet to be offending the first time around, snake aversion training, have you had much success that you know of people who have taken their dog like that Dalmatian, going, this would be a good candidate for that, to be trained not to get near snakes, period?
Just like any aversion training, that's going to be something that's going to be taught to the animal to try to make good decisions when their instinct is to make bad decisions. And I don't have any personal experience with aversion training, but many of my clients have taken their animals to aversion training after the first bite because they don't want to go into another hospital event with another bite, since they do live in a rattlesnake endemic area. The reports, like I said, I don't have personal experience with this, but the reports of people I've spoken with, both clients and other veterinary professionals, they have good things to say about the training, that they believe it does work on most animals, and it's certainly helpful because we don't really ever expect an animal to learn from their mistake. It's hard for them to know that that snake and that injury led to that hospital stay or that treatment. They're pretty naive to all of that, luckily. But without that aversion training, they'll probably go out and do it again. That might just lessen their likelihood to get in contact with a snake again, but it's not a guaranteed end-all.
But it may help. It's like ourselves. You get a hangover, and that should be our aversion, that you really shouldn't do alcohol again. And yeah, you kind of forget, and oops, yes. So it doesn't even work with people all the time. But how about insurance? Will most pet insurance companies, because you're saying this treatment can be extremely costly, does pet insurance cover things like snake bites?
Typically it does. Most insurance policies are unique, and you have to certainly read the fine print, but most policies that I am aware of, this would be sort of the same thing as an accidental injury, another bite from a dog. Usually those are all covered, but like any other insurance you buy, you would have to certainly know more about the policy, read the details, and if it's not clear, call them directly and ask. They'll certainly answer all your questions. I don't have any suspicions that after the first snake bite, if then you want to get your pet insured, would they have a waiver that suggests that it's not going to be covered if you're like a pre-existing condition? I don't know about that. I would have to have you refer to the insurance company directly. They work on they have their own local and individual protocols. There is a National Pet Insurance Advisory Board that helps make recommendations, but they all don't follow the identical policies. So I would just have to inquire with your pet insurance company directly. But most of them, to this point, that I've dealt with have covered.
I think in general, pet insurance is wonderful. And as you said, when in doubt, ask. One insurance policy, just like for ourselves, is not going to cover everything. But boy, I sleep a lot better knowing that I have insurance. Dr. Jandry, this has been awesome. Are there any parting words that you want to tell the listeners about snake bites and pet care?
Well, I guess for sure, I think the best thing that I always recommend is, because most of the time this happens when you're not prepared and not ready, and you just forget about it. We let our guard down just a little bit. So to make sure we do the best for our animals who still want to live their lives, run around the foothills and take hikes with us, what we should do and what I always recommend is know where you're going, know what the risks are, and if something bad does happen, unfortunately couldn't have been avoided in that situation, but know what to do and know where to go. So investigate your local emergency clinics. They should be open 24 hours in whatever area you go. It's pretty rare that you'd have to drive probably more than an hour in any direction in most places of California, and you'll find one that can get the attention that your pet needs. And seeing their phone number in advance is never a bad idea. Having your knowledge about your animal is great. You don't need to bring every single veterinary record you ever had, but just being aware of what your pet has had in the past, whether they've been snake bitten before, have they had antivenom or not before. Those are really important things to know if you're going to go to a new veterinarian with the new bite, because that'll help us, the veterinary population, take care of our animal patients much better.
And antivenin is expensive, and not all veterinarians carry it in stock, or it may be outdated. So not a bad idea if you're in an area that has a lot of snakes and you've seen some or you're just concerned, ask your veterinarian, hi, do you carry it? And if maybe enough people ask and they don't, they will. So this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. I've had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Carl Jandry. He is the Associate Dean for Student Programs at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, as well as a critical care specialist. Dr. Jandry, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Bernadine.
Please listen again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.